Ohayou gozaimasu. Good morning, everyone. This is Guardian Enzo jumping in for our first podcast for a while, certainly my podcast, first podcast for a few months. It's quite an international podcast today, especially when you look at the clock. It's 8:15 in the morning as I speak to you from Tokyo, Japan, which is just had a fairly large earthquake last night, a 6.8, a couple hundred kilometers away. But everything's all settled down now. We have it's a very international podcast. We've got Europe covered, where it's late in the evening, and the west coast of the United States, where it's mid afternoon. And we have a podcast virgin with us today as well, which is exciting. So, freed from the yoke, the tyranny of our podcast overlords, the Podfather and Stilts, we will talk about whatever the hell we want. We will make fun of each other. We will have a good time. And as always, the silent one, we will try to lure the silent one into joining us at various points during the conversation. And so whoever among the three of us gets the silent one to join, we'll get a special prize from me at the end, which I just thought of, so I'll have to think of what that will be. So let's jump around the table. As usual, let's introduce ourselves and what shows we're blogging this season, which in my case won't take long. And your question today is, if you could have any superpower, what would it be? So let's turn it over to the good morning one. Welcome home. Oh, Kairi. Kairi, welcome.
Buenas tardes. So I'm Kairi. I'm covering Akatsuki no Yona. I was covering Shigatsu wa Kimi no Uso. Let's see. If I had a superpower, it would be to stop time so I could just sleep forever and not have to do anything and then not freak out when I have a deadline.
Interesting. Okay, is there a superhero that has that power currently?
I'm pretty sure there must be someone somewhere.
And I know, like, Superman can, like, make the Earth revolve backwards and, you know, that kind of stuff. But, of course, he hasn't done that for a long time. all right, thank you. And then let's go across the pond to the UK, to Scotland. Oh, sorry, that might be a little bit of a hot topic. Let's go to Scotland for our first timer, the not cold one, Samu. Samu Kinnear. good morning. Good evening, in your case.
Yeah, good evening. Really good night. I'm Samu. I'm blogging World Trigger and Kiseiju this season. And superpower. I think it would have to be the ability to conceive something and for it to manifest in real life, if that makes sense. To be able to think something and then it happens.
Interesting. That one, that one has a lot of potential. It does indeed. Thank you, and welcome to your first RC podcast, hopefully the first of many. And let me say that I've greatly enjoyed your contributions on the site. You're a great addition to the team.
Thank you.
And you have very good taste in anime, which in many cases overlaps with mine, but then again, that's synonymous, so there you go. the silent one in his cage off by himself is Zumbra. welcome to join us. If you care to share a superpower as well, you can certainly be very interested in what that is. Perhaps it would be the power to destroy cages. But my name is Guardian Enzo. I am speaking to you from just a little bit west of central Tokyo in a place called Kagurazaka. I'm not blogging anything this season because I'm on hiatus, working my you know what off, trying to find a job that will allow me to stay in this country in the long term. Hopefully I'm pretty sure I'll be joining one way or another back up in January blogging something, although right now finding something I want to blog in the winter season may be a bit of a challenge. But there's good sequels, so we'll figure something out. And if I could choose a superpower, boring as it may be, I think I would choose time travel, because the amount of options that gives you is pretty intoxicating to me. And in fact, that just gives me an idea for a good question maybe for the next podcast, but we'll hold off on that. So let's talk a little bit about how this podcast came about, because it's sort of funny. Basically, Kairi, Samu, and I tend to tweet about a lot of the same shit, I would say. and at some point, someone, I think it might have been you, Samu, who said we ought to do a podcast sometime because it would be great. And of such moments are great ideas born. So there you go. We've thrown this together pretty quickly, but there was a little gap in the podcast schedule, and hopefully we can do an admirable job of filling it and giving you guys something worth listening to. I want to start off a little bit by talking about this season, the fall season, which you guys are blogging some of the better shows of the season, for sure, some of the ones I really like. But first thing I want to say is it doesn't necessarily have to be a show you're blogging, but why don't you guys tell us the one show that people are not watching this season that you think they probably should be? So either one of you guys want to jump in, go ahead.
Akatsuki no Yona.
Okay. But they probably aren't watching that, don't you think?
Not really. Some weeks there's only like 20 comments.
Yeah. Well, I was used to that with Mushishi, but Mushishi is still getting like no comments. I think there's sometimes like shows that people watch but don't comment on. But you may be right. You may be right.
In general, like fandom wise, where I'm like involved in other social media, there's just not a lot of buzz about it. There's like two other of my friends who are like really interested in it, and then I've heard of nothing else from anyone else.
So
some people.
Go ahead.
Sorry. Go ahead. I was just going to say, I think that really comes down to like the stigma associated with shoujo. Like, I had a friend like 2 weeks ago who asked me, "Is it worth watching because it's a reverse harm?" And I'm kind of feeling, you know, afraid to go in there. And I'm just like, "Watch, just watch it."
It's really not.
You can argue it's like in the broadest sense of definition because she's like basically the only female character that we've seen, but. Yeah. It's not acting the way that a regular reverse harem would, where, like, she's romantically interested in, like, all of them, and then you see all their good points, and then it's like, oh, no, which one should I like? That's not happening. So it's, like, in that sense, I don't really count as a reverse harem myself, but unfortunately that's, like, the stigma that I'm seeing a lot of people have about it, and it's, like, that's what's causing a lot of people to be reluctant to jump into it.
That's too bad. It really is. Which leads to another interesting question, I guess, which is the definition of a harem the makeup of the cast, or is it the actual themes of the show? Because if you want to use that definition, then pretty much every light novel adaptation is a harem show because it's one guy and a bunch of women. I mean, but most of them are not shows I would call harem shows, per se. Some of them are. Akatsuki was a show I really wanted to talk about. Well, we'll jump into that one in a little bit more detail. So, Samu, what would you say is your one show this season that people should be watching but they're not?
I would have to say Shirobako.
Interesting choice.
I did the first episodes and introduced it on Random Sea, but I kind of wish I did pick it up now because I'm just loving it every week, and I think more people should watch it, definitely. Mm.
It's a good show. What do you especially love about it?
Well, I think just because if you're interested in the animation and how it works in Japan, then that's just the show for you. And for me personally, having studied animation at university, it just clicks with me. It's just something that I like to see.
Mm. Kairi, are you watching it?
No, unfortunately, I'm not watching a whole lot of shows this season just because I'm really busy.
Okay.
Most of the
time. I am. It's. I blogged several episodes. I've kind of been on the fence about covering it. I think my interesting thing with Shirobako was I think it sort of sold itself as being something quite a bit different than what it actually is. It was a bit of a turnoff for me, honestly, but not so much that I didn't watch it and find out that I was wrong. I worry that a lot of people maybe, though, were turned off by what it was selling itself as and then never even gave it a chance.
Was for like the first 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Then just totally skipped forward to something completely different from how we thought it would be.
Yeah. I especially like the episode with the CGI versus written drawn animation, that whole conflict. Which is really the first time I've seen an anime kind of take on that topic head on. Mm-hmm. A little bit softly, I would say, because, you know, it's a sensitive area because they actually do talk about how for animators means, do I get to eat dinner? You know, do I have a job? Because it is – have any of you guys seen the salary chart based on Shirobako that's been circulating around the internet?
No, I haven't.
I've not seen it.
Yeah, there's a I'll see if I can find a link for it, but there's a somebody charted what anime industry salaries are and associated it with each of the characters on that show. And the entry level animator, what is her name? Emma-chan, is that her name? The one who's like the last episode, the old man was giving her advice about drawing cats. I forget her name.
But, yeah, Emma, the new Kiyamiya.
Yeah, so she makes entry level rookie key animator makes something like in American terms like $10 an hour.
Wow!
Except that people in her job work roughly 80 hours a week on average, 80 to 100 hours a week on average. So but they don't get paid overtime. So. Mm-hmm. They're salaried. So their salary is the equivalent of someone in America who works a 40-hour job making about $10 or $11 an hour, except they have to work 80 to 100 hours a week to earn it. And so you've heard a lot of people recently, like Miyazaki and Hideki Anno, say that they think the anime industry is in huge trouble because who in their right mind would want to make anime if that was the price of doing it?
Exactly.
And I think it's a very good question. Because would you want to work 80 hours a week to make, you know, $400? I mean, that's you really have to love anime to do that. And you know, so as we see drawn animation start to fade a little bit and CGI start to take over more and more, it's obviously the reason why. It's a lot cheaper. But I don't think the anime industry can survive in the future as a CGI entity. I think we have, this is another topic I thought we could discuss later, but to throw in my own show that people aren't watching that they should be, I'm going to go pretty far off the radar here and say a show from Sunrise called Tribe Cool Crew. Which, anyone seen any episodes of that?
I don't even think I've heard of it.
Yeah.
I've not watched it, but I know it's the dancing one.
Yeah,
children's ones.
Yeah, it is. It's definitely marketed as a kid's show. It's a Sunday morning show in Japan. It's about like street dancing, which is a topic which, I mean, to be honest, is of relatively little interest to me. But it's a fun show. I mean, it's very infectious. It's very clever. It's got good, decent humor to it. You know, it's definitely unlike anything Sunrise has done in a long time. It has the stigma. Kyrie, you talked about the stigma of the shoujo and especially reverse harem shoujo. Anything that has the kid show label attached to it.
Oh yeah, also that's not true.
There have been wonderful. I mean, the show that always springs to mind for me is a fantastic sports anime called Ginga E Kickoff, which was one of my favorite shows of last year, but which a lot of people never gave a chance because it was. In fact, let's even say Hunter x Hunter, which is often labeled as a kids anime, I think, but because people look at the character designs, Samu, you watch the show, you know, yeah. You hardly be more inaccurate than any show a kids show than Hunter x Hunter.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, it's amazing. But by the way, this is a historical moment for RC podcasting because, not counting a couple episodes that Kyrie has seen, this is actually the first time I've been on a podcast with another podcaster that's actually watched Hunter x Hunter. You have no idea how tempted I was to just make this a Hunter x Hunter hour and tell Kyrie to go, you know.
I can imagine.
So anyway, but since you brought up the subject, let's loop back to Akatsuki no Yona, which to me is one of the two shows of the season, along with Kiseiju, I would say. So Kyrie, you're blogging it. Why is this show so good?
Everything's really good, actually. I mean, it's a good story, great characters, and it's like it's so good because there's so much development, which clearly from the reaction, people are not getting enough of anymore.
Yes.
And it's like, it's just such a good story, and it's like every episode you can see a little bit more development, and it's like it's not telling you everything either. Like most, you know, when you read like a really bad book, and then like the first like chapter is just like, here's how the world works, and here's how like all this little stuff works, and here's the big picture, and now we're gonna start. And it's like this show doesn't
like
do that.
Every light novel, is that what you mean?
I don't read light novels, so I don't know. Well, I've read a couple, but very, very, very rarely. So, yeah, it doesn't do that. And it's great because, like, in the manga version, there's, like, still a whole lot of mystery as to what's going on. And it's not, like, you know, hey, what's in Aaron's basement kind of mystery. It's like, you know, it's well written. It's structured in a way where as you keep reading, you will understand more and more of the world and like why things are the way they are. And I just feel like it's just like a good thing. And I know that a lot of people have been complaining that, you know, first couple episodes, Yona's such a pampered, spoiled princess, she doesn't do anything. And it's like, yes, but that's obviously not what she's going to be the whole time. And if you're going to judge a character in the first couple episodes, then you're watching the wrong kind of show.
Yeah, it is very apparent that people are not used to being challenged much, are they? They want all their information up front, and they want their characters fully formed from the first episode. I love that about it, too, and I've noted that in my own post, that it's I love the fact that they don't tell us everything. Mm-hmm. I love the fact that when we watch Su-Wan is a great example for me. Because you start out with him being, you know, the best friend and the love interest, and then he's evil and he's, you know, he's the villain. But then you start to see other things going on and that make you ask yourself, what's really happening here? You know, there's stuff going on with this guy that caused him to do what he did. And you can see he's really in agony internally over the results of what he's done. But also that he seems to feel like he had no choice, right? That this, you know, even if he knew this was going to happen, he would still have done it. And it doesn't add up. It doesn't make sense. And I like the fact that it doesn't make sense. I like the fact it's like the series is a puzzle and every episode is a piece of the puzzle. And, you know, the audience is sort of trusted to stay with it. And Samu, you're watching this show as well, or yes?
Yeah, I'm watching it as well.
What's your take?
I think it's definitely one of the best this season.
Yeah.
I think the funny thing about it is, though, when I watched the first episode, I said to Kyrie, I thought this was just going to be a love triangle in court sort of series.
Right.
And then that was when I was like 15 minutes into the first episode.
Mm.
And then literally a few minutes later, everyone changed. And it's just that it doesn't give you everything straight away. It's giving you piece by piece, and the author obviously knows what the big picture is, and it's good that she's taking the time to do it slowly and not forcing it down our throat straight away.
But it does seem like there's resistance from viewers over that, which is a problem. Yeah. I think it's a major problem for anime right now. Is this reliance? I honestly believe, you know, it's no headline that I'm railing against the influence of light novels on anime, but I think it's the number of light novel adaptations, because light novels are so, you know, they give you everything up front, exactly as you described it, Kyrie, and and I think that's changed the way people expect their anime to be. I love this show. And there is a little scary thing, though, as you mentioned, Kyrie, the manga is still ongoing.
Yeah.
So we do, unlike with the other great new show this season, in my view, Kiseiju, which we kind of know that has an endpoint. The manga has been over for 15 years or whatever it is. We know where that's going. Even if we haven't read the manga, we know the series knows where it's going. Mm-hmm. Where do you think they're going? I mean, don't tell us, obviously, plot-wise, but do you see a logical endpoint as someone who's read the manga? Do you see a logical place for them to stop this? Yes? No?
I mean, sort of. Like, there's no real... You know how, like, in Tokyo Ghoul, there was, like, pretty much a clear spot where you could kind of stop? There really isn't that clear-cut of a portion in the manga that I can think of off the top of my head. There's a few points where I can imagine them saying, like, okay, we've reached this point, like... We'll keep moving on later, and then we'll probably stop at some point. So it's like, I'm thinking it's more. It's gonna be more like you laughing at the sirens.
Which one of us lives in America?
My sister says it always sounds like the devil is like near my window. Anyway,
sorry that the Berkeley police force cut you off there, but it sounds like you do have some concerns about how this might
I feel like they're gonna stop it. I mean, I don't know if you guys have ever watched like the original Inuyasha all the way to the end, where it just kind of you know how like they're just like, well, we're just gonna keep going and eventually beat Naraku. I feel like it's gonna come down to something like that. that.
Yeah. And you know there's not going to be a sequel, too. That's the thing.
Oh, I'm just going to cry if there isn't, because I really want one. It's like, it deserves one.
It does. It does.
And it's like, I think it was a commenter on RC called Hoshi. She was saying that, or he was saying that, I don't know. They were saying that the episode name seemed to be really, like, progressing really slowly, and I can see that just by watching the show and seeing how slowly it's progressing. It's progressing, I think, maybe even slower than the manga in some points. It's clearly that it's not gonna get to, like, what we have as far as the manga is. It's just not.
Well, let me ask you a question. It's as the one of us here who's read the manga. Sama, you haven't read the manga, have you, or have you?
No, I haven't.
Okay,
no.
So as the one of us who's read it, would you rather, if you knew straight up, flat out, there will be no sequel, whatever we get in Two Cores, that's it, which is probably the case anyway, would you rather that, where they just kind of stop, or would you rather them try to do an anime original ending?
Stop.
Yeah, I agree, because that'll at least make people who watched it want to finish it by reading the manga, hopefully.
Yeah, well, usually when you have an anime original ending, people are just, it's usually disappointing. Not always, but usually. And then you get upset because, like, your manga wasn't finished correctly, and it's just like, it's kind of a situation.
Yeah.
So I would prefer them to just get to a point where it's like, okay, well, now you can go read the manga, so no worries, you still have the rest of your story, even though it would be lovely to have it animated.
This is really one of the real frustrating things about being an anime fan, isn't it? Because it's happened so often. That's the nice thing about the show you're covering, Samu, Parasite, is we're going to get the ending that the author intended us to get.
Yeah.
Now, that's the other show this season, I would say, is other than Mushishi, which is always fantastic, but that's the other show this season I would say really stands out for me. And I think it's a very different kind of show, but all of the stuff we say about Akatsuki no Yona, with it being patient and not telling us everything, and I see a lot of the same characteristics for Kiseiju, actually. It really is patient in the way it lays out the story, and the characters are not the same from week to week. They do develop. So, you guys are covering some of the best shows. You're also covering World Trigger, too, which I think that might be another
isn't
one.
Isn't the best show.
No, but it would be one of those candidates for maybe people are not watching it, but they should, because I could see people watching that first episode and saying, God, the animation sucks. And just giving it up.
Mm-hmm.
I really kind of like it. I think it's a very interesting story.
Yeah, I was going to ask you that because we'd spoke about it a few times. Like, obviously, I'm a big fan of the manga, so even though I'm seeing this flawed adaptation, I'm kind of like, I'm still happy that it's getting adapted in the first place.
Yeah.
And then nearly all of the reaction to it from people who aren't familiar with the manga is pretty negative. And then I saw you, and you said you were quite enjoying it. So I was
Would you say, as a fan of the manga, are they doing a good job adapting it from a story standpoint? It's just the visuals that are bad, or you think they're kind of mangling that a little bit too?
I'd say they've been fine. Like, they've not went away from the original material at all. It's like panel by panel of every chapter so far.
See, that's kind of the equivalent for me was Baby Steps, which I absolutely love the manga, like my top 10 of all time. And the visuals were pretty mediocre.
Yeah,
but
I'd agree with that comparison totally.
But it's very faithful. I mean, it's very faithful to the story. Mm. It almost, as you say, panel for panel, and they made very few changes, but the ones they've made have been good. I don't like World Trigger. To me, is not on the level of Baby Steps from my own personal taste, but I just compare it with Seven Deadly Sins because, those are two series came out at the same time, roughly the same age manga. That manga is getting a much more high budget treatment. And it seems to be getting a much more positive reaction. But to me, I don't dislike it, but to me, in terms of the story itself, World Trigger is obviously more interesting to me than Seven Deadly Sins, which is just sort of a derivative, kind of a light fan service comedy. It's basically Seven Deadly Sins to me is basically a cookie cutter shonen manga. I mean, it's well-executed cookie-cutter shonen manga where it seems like World Trigger is kind of trying to do something a little interesting and different.
Mm-hmm. I think of Nanatsu no Taizai, I would compare it as like it's halfway between Dragon Ball Z and Fairy Tail. It's like those two series mashed together. World Trigger, just like you say as well, it's trying to do something different. Like, you don't see many shonen battle series that are sci-fi, especially not from Weekly Shonen Jump. Yeah. I don't know if there's ever been that big of a sci-fi series.
Well, you're the biggest Shonen Jump expert probably on this panel, so if you say there hasn't, I'm going to defer to you.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. Nothing's coming to mind. But then again, World Trigger itself isn't massive.
I mean, there are others that have sci-fi elements to them, but not like a hard sci-fi series. And we still don't know how long World Trigger the anime is going to be, do we? Is it going to be one quarter or quarter? It still has a really good announcement.
That's the scary thing. I really hope it's two core. I hope it's not going to be ongoing, because it's Toei, and that doesn't... Toei plus ongoing anime doesn't... That, no.
Yeah, I agree. That's a problem.
Especially after Toriko.
Yes, many...
The other thing as well is there's not enough chapters. I think right now there's 81 chapters.
Right.
That's not a lot to go through weekly, and it's like two or three chapters per episode.
Yeah.
So it's basically asking for filler.
Two cores and stop would be perfect. But then again, it's this problem, you know, too soon. But I really think that Shonen Jump, I think they looked at it and they said, okay, well, 2015, we don't want to burn Ass Class and Soma too early. So we're going to hold those back a little bit until they get a few more chapters. But we want to have something in the second half of 2014. So they picked a show that was kind of middling popularity and said, yeah, we should probably wait on World Trigger 2. But, you know, if we screw it up, it's not that big a loss. I hate to say it, but I honestly think that was part of the equation for them.
I think so as well, because there's a lot of series that have been in the same position as World Trigger. Like, they're barely... Sometimes they're on the bottom five, or they're just in the middle. And they last for a while. They never get an anime. They go for about 100 or so chapters, and then they'll just fade away. But it did catch people off guard when World Trigger was announced so soon. I think it was about 60 chapters or something when it was actually announced in the magazine, which is, I think, one of the earliest, instead of... The only one I can think of is Hunter x Hunter originally, the 1999 version.
Yeah. That's too soon. It's just too soon. But, you know, it's too bad, because Toei is capable of doing, you know, well-animated series. I mean, look at Kyosho Giga. They did a beautiful job with that.
No, that was amazing.
But, you know, I don't watch... I love good visuals. I don't necessarily watch anime for good visuals. I'll take a good story and good characters over good visuals. But nothing turns people off quickly like bad visuals. You know, and it's a shame, because World Trigger does deserve better than that. So let's segue then sideways here, because again, the whole idea of this conversation is conversation. This is a very free-form podcast. Ronya. Anybody watching Ronya?
Unfortunately, no, not yet.
Yep.
So that's a show. I'm more turned off by bad CGI than bad drawn animation as a general rule. And, you know, you were in Sweden, too. How dare you not watch Ronya, Okari? You were in
Sweden. No, I want to, but like I said, I'm not watching very many. And then the CGI turned me off, too, so I put it off.
So, Simon, what do you make of the CGI with Ronya? I mean, how do you think it's working with the Ghibli backgrounds and the Ghibli character designs?
You know, I think it works better than any other series I've seen with the CGI. I think it's the character designs that work with it. Obviously, it's not perfect. There's times when their faces just look really, really strange, and the expressions just don't work. But in comparison to Sidonia no Kishi, which I've not watched, but I do plan on watching, whenever I saw screenshots of that, it just seems like the character designs didn't fit well with the 3D CG. It didn't work for me. But for this one, it does work. I don't know. I think it's just the character designs.
Okay. It is odd, though. There's a very big disconnect for me. When you're looking at a still shot before things start moving, you think, oh, it's Ghibli. Wow. Yeah. And then the characters start to move, and you're like, oh, my God, it's a bad acid trip.
Backgrounds are lovely.
Yeah, it really – I mean, even in Sidonia, which Sidonia is the same – it's Polygon. It's the same CGI company. but without the Ghibli, you know, the Ghibli touch. The mangaka for Sidonia does have some beautiful backgrounds, and you occasionally do see some of that creep into the anime. But overall, I would say this is certainly visually it's better. Mm-hmm. But Ronya is a classic, super popular children's story, you know, in Sweden, and even to the point where it made some waves in America. That's how popular it was. I don't know if it ever was big in the UK, but but the thing about Ronya too is, Samu, I think you'd agree after having watched the series, it's a pretty slow moving story as it's being presented by Ghibli here. I'm not sure 26 episodes was mm-hmm. absolutely ideal here, because it takes a long time for stuff to actually happen. And I worry with Ronya that if they weren't turned off by the character designs, they may have been turned off by how slow the pacing is. And it actually really isn't until about the fifth or sixth episode, you know, when Burke is introduced and things start to get a little bit more lively. This is another one of those shows, though, I would say give this one a shot if you haven't seen it, especially because it may be the last thing Ghibli ever produces. And it would be kind of a shame if it was, on a number of levels, but it would be a shame if that was the case and nobody watched it.
I think it definitely deserves people watching it. Totally.
It's a, you know, bear in mind, again, this is one of the most beloved children's stories, in the 20th century. I mean, it really is. It's got a great source material. The CGI is what it is, you know, as Shirobaku fans, you know, this is what we're talking about. This is why those animators are worried about losing their lunch, because, if they don't get paid to work on series, they don't get to eat, then they have to go work at 7-Eleven or McDonald's. So, that's a sad thing. So I had one other this season category that I wanted to throw out there, and we'll start with you, Kairi. What's the show you wouldn't watch even if the alternative was having your eyes gouged out with yakitori skewers?
Great. tough one. There's a lot.
yeah, it's a tough category.
Yeah,
and
a lot
Kimber
of
the says Maho Senso, by the way.
But let's, a lot of them I have never even thought about watching, just because like they turn me off just with the description and the animation. A lot of it's like, especially like these how do I describe them exactly? Just bad. Really bad shows.
Yeah.
I mean, let's see. Let me find some, just because I try not to.
I'll jump in while you're thinking about it. Let's say, I don't even know how you pronounce it. Cross-eng, whatever heck this thing is, which is the most misogynistic and vile and despicable piece of garbage to come down the pike this season.
Did you watch the first episode?
Yes.
I didn't, but I don't want to.
No, you spared yourself.
What is that about?
Yeah, it's.
But do I want to know?
Probably not.
Let me put it this way. You know, Diabolik Lovers would be a much more enlightened view of the world.
Oh my god.
It's pretty sad. It's and popular, of course, as you can imagine.
It's getting quite a lot of Blu-ray sales, isn't it?
Yeah. All right, Samu, you got one?
First thing I was thinking of was Trinity 7, which Stilts is covering. But then I completely... No, that's not anything against Stilts. But then I completely forgot about Twin Tails, which I wouldn't watch if
that's
anyone
my choice.
Paid
There's
me to do
my
it.
Choice right there.
I completely forgot about it. So yeah, Twin Tails.
Would probably be my second choice. Yeah. That's a pretty...
Trinity 7 as well, though, because that's...
Why Trinity 7?
It seems like just the kind of series that it's just the series I don't like. I don't know. I've not watched it to make a proper judgment on it, but I don't feel like I would like it if I tried it. But there's people who really love it, and power to them if they love it.
Yeah, that's kind of the way I have to look at an anime schedule these days, and just say, you know, if there's people that love it, and you know, and more power to them. The thing about Trinity 7 is it really seems like. It seems like it would have come from a light novel, but it is actually a manga, which is...
That's what I thought as well.
Yeah, it's really surprising. But I think the reason for that, honestly, is because I think that more and more manga are trying to be like light novels. But maybe that's just my prejudice, my natural prejudice showing through. I do think we need to talk about Shigatsu, because, that's certainly been one of the highlight moments, the headline moments of the season. The interesting thing about Shigatsu is that Kairi and I both started out, you know, really pretty positive. I think me more than Kairi. And we both ended up dropping it in the same week. You know, I would say I was the luckier one in that I didn't have to deal with nearly as much, you know, blowback on that as Kairi did. And, you know, we won't go too deeply into that, but fair to say that Kairi's taken some serious, serious pushback from the readers of RC about dropping that show. Would you say that's a fair statement, Kairi?
Okay. Oh, dear Lord. Well, it's still going on, for one thing.
Yeah, well, and so we can talk about, I think, you know, we don't want to be on, you know, Shigatsu for the rest of the podcast, and we could literally, I think, talk about this show for the entire podcast without even getting into the blowback, just because of how interesting it is that it's, that it, you know, to me, jumped off the rails. Because I got to tell you, I really, really, really loved the first two episodes, especially the second episode. But even in my glowing positive review of the second episode, which was, it was an overall, it was a glowing review. I even put in that review, but there's a couple of things here that make me really nervous. And you could even tell then that something, there's just something off in the way this show looks at the world. And that's the best way I can describe it. This show has a very strange way of looking at the world, doesn't it? This series, I guess I should say, because it comes from the manga. Although I'm told that the manga is not as skewed as the anime has portrayed it. But there's no fucking common sense. I mean,
well, I think a lot of people would disagree with you.
But this is not how we help someone.
Yes, I know.
These are not friends. These are not nice people.
Yeah.
Other people. And this other thing, the last episode, as soon as I saw the title of the last episode, which was Slave to the Score, that was when I knew, I'm glad I didn't watch this episode. Because I literally, in case anyone doesn't know, I've literally dropped it at this point. I can't even watch it at this point.
Yeah, I'm not watching it either.
And I love classical music. And it's not that fucking simple. I'm sorry. It's not how it works. There's two sides to this.
I honestly don't have as much of a problem with that part just because I'm used to seeing art treated like this simple thing. And you do kind of have this, especially like in beginning musicians, where you start to like focus too much on like the performance aspect.
Right.
The technical stuff, and then you never learn how to put in your own soul. So I'm not as bothered with this because it is like an issue that people think about whether or not that makes up the entirety of classical music. That's completely different. So that's just not as big a problem for me. I can overlook that. For me, really, the problems are all about like Aruma and his friends.
Yeah, that's a bigger problem for me. And I use the word friends loosely, I would say. With friends like that, who needs enemies would be my question.
Really?
And Samu, everyone knows what Kairi and I think about this show. What do you think about it?
Well, for the past few or the last few episodes that Kairi did cover, I did leave a few comments, and my impressions were pretty much just the same. I was a little more blunt about it. I didn't really go into detail, but I think it's the characters and it's the fact that the author himself thinks these things and he's projecting it onto these characters, and it shows that this is his world here. That's what he thinks is the best thing.
That's my feeling too. And that was the question I was asking myself after like three or four episodes. Okay, if the author is just showing kids making mistakes and doing cruel and dumb things, and then it's going to be okay. But then I realized, no, this is really what the author thinks.
Yeah,
he thinks
completely.
They're doing the right thing.
Samu left a perfectly wonderful quote, which was, "Everything about this series is absolutely gorgeous, except that the main characters are all abusive shits and I hate them."
That was my comment.
Yeah, it was a perfect comment.
It really is. Yeah, it is. That's like beautifully succinct. I mean, it is. They're absolute, except for Arima. They're absolute.
Yeah.
I include Wataru. I include the male friend too, because he's getting involved in this too.
He wasn't involved at first, and then all of a sudden, it's like, well, there goes the last straw there.
I mean,
he gives some amazing out-of-character speeches, though, as well, doesn't he?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. It's any of you guys old enough to watch Seinfeld?
I watched some when I was a little kid, but obviously I don't remember.
There was an episode of Seinfeld called The Bizarro Jerry. And mm-hmm. the idea of the Bizarro Jerry is that there's a bizarro world where there's bizarro versions of yourselves where everyone does everything the opposite and backwards. Mm-hmm. And my thought about episode 4 or 5 is this is like the bizarro world, except that it's not a joke. It's serious. And mm-hmm. we're supposed to believe like this bizarro world is how the real world should be. And that was like one of the scariest insights I've had about any show is, oh my God, there's someone out there who actually thinks this is good, that, mm-hmm. that actually thinks this is how people should deal with problems.
And you can imagine my reaction when like a whole bunch of people said, yes, that is the way it should
be. Yes, exactly. And there is a certain element of maybe anime culture where when it comes to guys, it's just like, you know, toughen up, princess, you know?
Yeah.
But that's, you know, and there is an element of that, I have to say, having lived here now in a couple of years, I've seen it. Mm-hmm. There is an element of that in Japanese culture, where young men, young boys, there's not a lot of handholding when it comes to problems. There is a lot of toughen up, princess, in the way, culturally these things are viewed here, and therapy, which, you know, I would say, here's how I would say it. If you want to look at a great philosophical spectrum of empathy, on one end of the scale would be this show, which is like basically their idea of empathy is if you were on fire, I wouldn't cross the street to piss on you. and then the opposite end of the empathy scale for me is Watamote, which is incredibly dark and incredibly difficult, but clearly has a great deal of compassion for the person that's suffering here, who's clearly the writer. And just the idea that this is a person that needs someone to help them and no one is stepping up and helping. So now that's a girl, so it's obviously a slightly different dynamic, but I don't know. This is an interesting show. I you know, I've never gone from A to Z so quickly on a show as I went on this show. I mean, literally from it being like, my God, that was the best episode to the season to my God. This show
is horrible.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. And there's really talent here. This is a writer that has a real ability, and there's elements of the anime that are beautiful. It reminds me a lot of Horo Musuko, actually, in a lot of respects. But it's just, no, I can't do it. I can't go there. Yeah.
And like a lot of people have been telling me, like, how can you love a manga when you can't even watch the anime? I'm just like, it's a lot easier to overlook these things when they're in a little tiny panel and you just like skip over it and you're like, well, fuck that, and just keep reading. It's like, I mean, when you are immersed in anime, there's always going to be something you don't like. Especially if you're a girl. Like, I'm just going to put it out there. Like, there's just shit, you know, you learn to deal with. Like, you know, giant tits everywhere. Like, you get used to it. Like, it's annoying and you hate it, but like, there's nothing you can really do about it, and there are good stories behind it. So you just learn to like overlook it. But then when it's like done the way the anime did it, like in Shigatsu, I mean, where like they are focusing on these points and they're using all their like direction to make this into like the most positive experience, like this is just, no, stop, don't do that. It's really bad. And it's just like, I don't know, like I feel like some of my initial love for the anime, for the manga, has cooled just because of the way the anime has been treating it. But it wasn't my favorite manga in the first place. I really liked it because I love music and I love the way that Arima eventually, you know, starts working around his problems. But I always hated the fact that they pushed him around. It just wasn't as big a deal in the manga because I could just gloss those parts over and ignore them, you know?
Is this manga also still ongoing? It is, isn't it?
Yeah, it's still ongoing. But I think I heard it might be ending, but I don't
know. Yeah, no, I think you're right. I think there was talk of the simultaneous ending. For the anime and the manga.
Yeah.
Well, I don't want to burn too much time on this show because obviously we've burned a lot of time on it already.
But can I say like one last thing?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. So I was talking to Frog-kun on Twitter, and we were talking about how like it looks like a lot of the backlash. Like, I don't want to get too political and everything, but I just kind of feel like this is important for people to think about. It's like there were people who were really against the idea of the fact that when I said these kids are emotionally abusing each other, then they were like, no, that's not true, because then we would all have been abusing each other. And it's like, that's what you should be thinking about. Like, that's when you should turn, you know, if that's a problem, if you're thinking, holy shit, maybe I did this, I don't want to be an abuser, maybe instead of fighting against it and saying, no, that's not abuse, you should probably think, oh my God, did I abuse someone? You know, it doesn't mean, did you do it on purpose? Because abuse can happen without you doing it on purpose. It's like, you might not be meaning to hurt someone, but the fact that you did hurt someone means you should probably reevaluate and why.
Interesting.
And it's just like, and to me, it's just like a lot of people were just, you know, hiding from this. Like, they didn't want to think about it that way. So immediately they said, no, bullshit, this isn't abuse. This is just friends, you know?
Right.
So I don't know. I got that
comment a lot, too. This isn't abuse. This is just normal, you know, adolescent friendship. And I'm like,
yeah. And there's a lot of people who said, I would do this totally. So yeah. It's like, I feel like that's a really big part of why the reaction was the way it was. Because sure there are people who fuck around with their friends like that, and they never thought, holy shit, what if I actually really hurt their feelings?
You know, I think that's a great point. And I also think it's worth pointing out that it's especially vile in this instance because it isn't just normal friends being cruel to each other. One of them is really, really vulnerable.
Yeah. I mean,
really, really vulnerable. And like... Yeah. And this is like the worst boy in the world that you should be treating this way.
Yeah.
And the author is standing off to the side with his pom-poms doing cheers while all this is going on.
Mm.
That's the part that really turned me off most is that when it became clear, you know, and you're right, it's the message people should not be taking, they shouldn't be taking that, oh, no, this isn't that unusual. The message they should be taking is it should be a lot more unusual than it is. Maybe this is wrong that we just assumed this was okay.
Mm-hmm.
But when a manga has a screwed up message, it will get screwed up reactions from people. That's the thing.
Yeah.
And I think that's the problem. All right, enough about Shigatsu. Sorry, Sam, if you wanted to say anything, I'm going to cut it off.
Just to finish it off,
yes.
So that it's not totally negative.
Yeah.
Like, I've already stated my opinion on it. I'm still watching it. I think, hopefully, now that it's got past the introduction of the series where it's about Aruma's trauma and him trying to get past that, hopefully the series will, you know, improve on the parts that it's better at, because as you said in episode 2, that was the standout episode of the season, like that for me at least, because just the performance itself.
Yeah, it was incredible.
Mm.
That's what the series is best at, and I hope that we get to see more of that in future. The only problem is the other characters that aren't Aruma.
Well, yes, that is, you mean the shits. No, that's definitely a problem. All right, thank you. So let's talk about a more pleasant topic. Speaking of series that are ending, a manga I think we're all reading, Koe no Katachi.
Yes.
Yes.
Has just been announced for an anime adaptation for sometime in 2015. By the way, in case you haven't heard, the most surprising anime adaptation, I never would have anticipated. Yes, there is going to be another season of Shingeki no Kyojin. I know that you're shocked. that was officially announced. That will be coming in 2016. But I just want to talk briefly about this manga. Obviously, we won't spoil it for people who haven't read it. The manga just ended at about little over 60 chapters. I mean, not a lot of chapters. So this should be one they can do a full adaptation on pretty easily. So you have any thoughts, either of you guys, on like, as far as like casting or staff or studio, about who you'd like to see take on Koe no Katachi?
Mm.
I think Brainspace.
Yeah. It was my reaction too, but Brainspace isn't really Brainspace anymore, are they? Omori Takahiro has taken, you know, he's gone to Shuka to do Durarara.
And who was it that did Ishukan Friends? Was it Brainspace?
Yeah, it was. And that's definitely Brainspace. The old Brainspace, if they still exist, I think they're the perfect studio to do Koe no Katachi.
Mm-hmm. Or Shaft.
Oh, God. a lot of amazing. People on Anime Suki have been saying Kyoto Animation, and I'm like, dude, seriously? No. Are you like on drugs?
I love First of all,
they
would
never do it because they only adapt the material they own now. But I could hardly think a Shaft would be a worse choice, but it would be hard to think of another worse choice than Kyoto Animation to do Koi no Katachi. I think JC Staff would also be a good call.
Yeah, JC Staff, fine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because JC Staff and Pirro does this too. They do faithful adaptations in terms of content. And this isn't a manga that needs a lot of like facelifting and radical changes to be an anime. I think they just need to adapt it. It'll be interesting, though, to see, in case anyone doesn't know, this is a series about one of the main characters is a deaf girl. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of signing in the manga. It'll be very interesting to see, A, whether they do all that signing makes its way into the anime, which I hope it does. Yeah. And also who they get to play the character who does speak in the manga. And I would hope that they would get a deaf girl to play her, which would add a nice dose of realism to it. But I don't know. It'll be interesting to see what they decide. This is a great series. I mean, but it's definitely one I can see people are going to watch this and they're going to say that they're going to throw the M word melodrama at it.
Yeah.
But because it is very dramatic, but it's not like the most subtle, understated series of all time, but I think it does have a lot of really, really intense, honest emotion to it. Mm-hmm. I like it a lot. So I'm hoping this is going to be, you know, a great adaptation.
I like it a lot as well.
Really? Yeah, go ahead.
You go,
Kari. Okay. I was just going to say, like, as an addendum to Shigatsu, I feel like this is bullying done right.
Yes.
It's like, I was thinking about that when I was reading the last few chapters. I was just like, okay, see, this is the difference.
Right.
Yeah. To things,
you know,
like when someone is...
One word, empathy. That's the difference.
Yep.
And empathy is such an important thing, generally speaking, no less so in anime. But Koi no Katachi is like the ultimate empathy manga. The entire manga is basically about empathy. That's really the whole story. So I just think this is, you know, it, like I said, I'm sure people are going to throw that melodrama at it. But first of all, melodrama is not always a bad thing, you know, but it's more just straight up drama, I think, you know. Anyway, so I want to take a brief moment here to cast you two off against each other. So that's always entertaining for the audience to be in the, you know, to be in the Coliseum and watch the gladiators go at it. So I'm going to say, take like 2-3 minutes, and I want to ask Kairi, I want to ask you, take like 2 or 3 minutes to convince Samu to watch Eureka 7.
Oh god.
Okay.
Like, she hasn't done it enough already.
But they haven't heard her do it. That's the point.
Okay.
Okay, let's see. Why you should watch Eureka 7? Great characters, wonderful plot, really, 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 really good atmosphere, really interesting setting, great action, even though it's from 2005. There's just like, if you watch it, it has not aged very much. It just looks
By the way,
good.
I'm including AO in this as well. I mean,
yeah, okay.
Factoring it all in as one body. Okay.
Okay, AO counts too. AO's great. Let's see. Eureka's a great female character. Huh?
There's disagreement with that, though, isn't there?
There is, but that's another topic.
Okay, I won't touch that.
We both love it, and that's all that counts.
Renton's a great relatable character. Eureka's also a really good relatable character if you have similar experiences. Family motifs everywhere, really, really good family motifs everywhere, different kinds of couples and romances, which you also get to see different kind of relationships. Huge cast, but you care about every single person. Like, if anyone in the friggin' cast died, you would cry, okay? I'm just saying. Let's see. Really, really beautiful designs by Kenichi Yoshida, who's doing Gundam Rekkengetsu. Just like a really epic story, and it's all sci-fi, and there's a ton of philosophy, ton of references. Every single name in the story is a reference to something. And like, there's references to art, to people, to politics, to hippies, to all kinds of things. What else? It's just so much.
Okay, that's good. That's a good start. I do think you make some interesting points, because you don't see a lot of anime talk about the things or reference the things E7 does, like the hippie culture and all that kind of stuff. It's really interesting. So Samu, I was going to ask what your excuse is, but I'll let you off the hook.
No, let's hear the excuse.
Okay, this is my excuse. Not my excuse, my reason. I know that I'm going to enjoy it. It's just not on the top of my list of what I'm going to watch next. I can. It seems like the show that I'm going to enjoy it when I do get around to it. And I will get around to it. I promise, Kairi. I promise.
That's kind of like Kairi with Hunter x Hunter. She'll get around
to it. Well, I'm actually watching it, though. It's just that I'm watching it with a friend, and like she gets pissed when I don't.
So, Samu, you have to make one promise, though, that when you do get around to it, you watch Astral Ocean as well. You have to
watch all of
it and make up your own mind.
Yeah, I would.
Okay, now, Samu, you get 2 to 3 minutes. Convince Kairi to watch Game of Thrones.
Oh, Game of Thrones. Where to start? Well, if you like fantasy, then you'd like Game of Thrones. It's got that crossover appeal. More people enjoy it than just the niche fantasy people as well. So even if you don't like fantasy, but I think you do anyway, even if you don't, you can still enjoy it. The characters are the best part of the series, definitely. George does a brilliant job with so many point of views. I think the show does its best to juggle all different point of views, not always at the same level as George does with the books and A Song of Ice and Fire. You'll find a character or characters that you'll root for, definitely, and you'll love. For me, obviously, that's Sansa, as I said in my introduction, and she's my favourite. There's a lot that you could get from the series. You could consider a deconstruction of typical fantasy tropes as well, the things that it tackles. I don't know what else I can say. I'm not overly, completely positive about it. I think there's flaws to it, but I think it's good that things do have flaws, because you can recognise that. You don't need to love something and
unreserved.
You know, be blind about it. Just say, nope, there's nothing wrong with it at all. But it's a great series. And
so would you recommend
everyone has to switch it.
What would you recommend you do first, read or watch?
Watch. Watch until you feel like you want to read it.
Good answer. I wish now that I'd had the experience, because I started reading it after the first season, exactly as you said. I watched until I decided I wanted to read it. And I found that I could enjoy the rest of the series quite as much having read the books.
So should I just wait for the series to finish and then read the books?
See, the thing is, that's one of the flaws. The series is going to get ahead of the books next year.
Yeah.
And it's either they're going to spoil the story from the books, or they're going to go a completely different route. Okay. And either way it's going to be messy. That's how I'll say it.
Okay.
Because I don't know if I trust Dan and Dave to do as good a job as George would himself.
Well, but then, of course, the idea is that they know where he's going, even if he hasn't written it yet. So you'd like to think that at least spiritually they're going to be faithful to where he was intending to go with the books. Mm-hmm. But, that is going to be almost a unique situation, very unusual, where the TV show started out so far behind, but because Martin takes so long, it's now going to catch up and pass. And that really sucks for Martin, too, because when he writes the books now, at least in theory, everyone is going to know what happens.
Mm.
So you have to wonder if that's going to hurt sales for him.
That's the thing. Either they're going to go that route, or they're going to just do their complete own thing.
An anime original ending?
Yeah, an anime original for Game of Thrones.
Yeah, that could be a problem.
I don't know.
Yeah. But anyway, Kairi, I wouldn't wait. I would just watch it. Because first of all, the books are going to... Martin is not a young man. He hates when you ask the question, but there is a very serious question about whether he will even finish the series, because he's got two more books to do at least. And he takes 7 to 10 years between volumes, it seems like.
I guess
a bit less than that. But by the way, my favorite tweet ever was from George R. R. Martin, who tweeted once, every time someone asks me when the next book is coming out, I kill another Stark. So yes, that's George's view on that. So we're at a little over an hour already, so I don't want to end up without doing a couple of the fun little mind screw things that our listeners love so much. So before we get into the wrap-up phase, I want to ask you guys, an interesting, I think, question. So think about this in very general terms, about the anime industry right now, where it is today. Keep it very simple, very basic, but not like about a specific show or something. I'm talking about a more general trend. If you could tell the industry to stop and start doing one specific thing, what would it be? So in other words, you have the power to say, okay, you know, no more shows about penguins, whatever it is, but one very specific thing. I love penguins. It's just an example. So, who wants to go first? Start one thing, stop one thing.
Okay. I think mine's would be to stop having shows where you have the single male main character who gets some characterization, and then you have this cast of female characters who are cardboard cutouts, and you get maybe an episode or two for each of them, and you basically only scratch the surface of who they are, and they're not really characters, they're just there for fan service. Even if it's not fan service like as you'd expect, just fan service to see a certain character or archetype, or that certain character that you want to see in that sort of series.
Okay. And start?
More shows like Shinsekai Yori, where you need to take the risk, even if it's not going to be commercially successful. If it's a story that has to be told, they should tell it.
Okay, great. Kairi?
I would really like to have shows that have less pandering elements, especially sexist pandering elements. I mean, like I said earlier, you learn to live with it, but you still hate it. I still hate it. And just to have like more well-told character-driven stories about like all kinds of things, but just stories that don't focus so much on the technical details and focus more on like people's experiences and feelings, just well-told stories, honestly. Like, I really don't see very many of them anymore. They're all like these stereotypical things going on.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Sounds like formula is a big issue for both of you.
Yeah, formula.
Definitely agree with you there. So my stop would be, and I'm going to say that this is a throw the baby out with the bathwater kind of a thing, no more adaptations of light novels. And let me preface that by saying there are some very good light novel adaptations, but this is a rule, right? This is not where we get to pick and choose. And considering the number, the by percentage, how many good light novel adaptations we get compared to how many good manga or how many good novel or such, I would say that would be a step forward, because so much of what's formula and what's gone wrong in anime these days, I think, comes from the influence of light novels and my start would be start doing more series that aren't set in high schools, because high schools have become high school anime. Listen, historically speaking, many, if not most, of the great anime have been set either in high schools or among high school age characters. So there's nothing wrong with that. But the problem is, kind of as you guys were talking about, the high school has become such a formula. It's more or less become, rather than characters, as you said, Samu, it's people expecting people to fill certain roles in the high school setting. And we need more series set in, yes, middle schools, I think, is an improvement. I think series about children. I mean, there have been so many great anime about children that adults can enjoy. And we need more series about working adults. We need more series about college students. And we need more series about kids. And less series that are stuck in the high school rut. That would be my start, which I guess would also be a stop too, if you want to look at it that way. So one more little challenge I'm going to throw out there for you. I'm going to give you the first line of a joke, and I want you to supply me the punchline.
Oh fuck!
Okay? Oh no! This is going to go horribly.
Yeah.
All right, so. I'll even go first this time to give you time to think about it. So the first line of the joke is, Stilts and Zanibus walk into a bar. Okay. So my punchline is, Stilts and Zanibus walk into a bar, and Zanibus says to Stilts, so what do you like about hosting podcasts? And Stilts says, well, I get to ask screwed up questions of all the other people and make them answer them. So that's mine. So, Kairi, go first.
Okay. Stilts and Zanibus walk into a bar. Zanibus asks Stilts,
By the way, Zumbra chimes in with his own punchline, but I won't share it.
It's the same as mine. Don't say it.
Good one.
Nope, you can't take it.
Oh my god. Okay, now I lost what I was gonna say.
All right, you think, Samu? You got. You can use it. You can use it.
Okay. Whatever. Stelts and Zanibus. Stelts and Zanibus walk into a bar. Stelts bangs his head off the door. Zanibus walks under it. Ta-da. That was actually what I was.
Great minds think alike. All right, I'll take your word for it.
I can't top that. I'm shit at jokes. I'd have to think really long on it.
All right. Well, all right. I won't.
I mean, I can make a joke about stinks getting drunk. Stilts getting drunk.
But Brian can slip.
That's the joke itself.
All right, you're off the hook, Kyrie. That was funnier than any punchline you could have come up with. Okay, then to wrap up, let's go with, you know, the dealer's choice segment. Anything you guys want to talk about that we haven't had a chance to talk about? Any topics you want to throw out there? This is your opportunity.
Just playing video games.
Okay.
Sam, what are you playing, if you're playing anything?
Dota 2. That's pretty much it.
Okay. You're going to get Pokemon, right?
Yeah, but like I said to you, because of you, it's a week
late. Yeah.
Yeah, everyone's got theirs and I've not.
I'm sorry.
Pokemon. Yeah. It's all about Digimon, people. Come on.
No, I never even saw Digimon.
Digimon's next year, though.
Well, yes, but it's been around a lot of last years, too. But
well, like, the great part about, like, this Pokemon game, though, is that was my childhood Pokemon game, Generation 3, and now they're remaking it, and it's like...
Yeah, okay, I can accept that.
This is my childhood. But I have a cool story about that, by the way. There was, like, a random guy who bought my sister and I our first Pokemon game.
Was he, like...
Okay.
Did he show up in the park you were playing with a van?
No. When my mom was buying a laptop for college, she took us to Fry's Electronics, and my sister and I were just, like, little, so we were just, like, running around the store. It was, like, 2003. And then we see, like, the new Pokemon game on the shelf, and then we were like, oh my god, mom, buy it for us. And of course, we were really spoiled. And my mom was like, no, I can't afford it. I have to buy my laptop. My sister and I started crying and screaming. And then, like, this random guy just comes up into my mom, and he's like, here, just buy it for them. And she's like, no, I can't. And he's like, just give it to them. Like, it's totally fine. Like, here, I'll pay for it. And he just paid for it, and we were like, wow. Like, I still remember that. I want to give a kid a game now.
That's weird.
Wow, that's an interesting story.
Mm-hmm.
You should pay it forward, Kyrie. You should, like you said.
Yeah, I actually am planning to, but right now I'm short, so I'm hopefully next semester when I have a little bit more money, I'll be able to do it.
Wasn't there a scene in Anohana where the kids went into the shop where Jinta was working and they couldn't afford the game and he fronted them some money to buy the game or something like that? I think so. Yeah. And then of course.
Like
the main game in Anohana was basically a Pokemon spoof anyway. So.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah. How about you?
Anohana's just the best.
Any random topics to throw at us?
I don't know. I could say Anohana is just the best.
That is a good one. I would recently had a chance, if anyone wants to check it out on my blog, I recently had a chance to go to where that series was set, and it was... That was very interesting. I took some pictures at the temple where they played hide and seek and stuff like that. Anohana is a funny sort of show. It's like you said, Samu, about it's okay if something is flawed, you can still love it. That's how I feel about Anohana. There are definitely flaws, but emotionally speaking, that show really hits me like just hits me like a ton of bricks. It's really powerful. And yes, I that's a melodrama. I understand, but that's good melodrama. You know, that's how melodrama should be. Okay, so what did you think? How was the experience for you, your first time on the podcast?
I don't know. Well, I think you treated me well.
I think so.
Okay. All I can do is apologize for my accent if you don't understand anything I'm saying.
Well, we need to get you and Passerby on the same call, in which case we can then get the comments from people who say, I didn't understand thirds of the people were saying.
They need a translation.
If they can't understand what you're saying, they won't understand the apology anyway.
Yeah, it's true. I don't understand. Are Americans so sheltered that they can't understand English if it's spoken with anything but an American accent?
Oh, my God. Don't get me started on this topic. You're talking to a bilingual person.
Well,
don't
sort of
get me started.
I mean, yeah, I just... If you've ever watched Craig Ferguson people, that's what Samu talks like. They come from the same basic place. So and if you haven't been watching Craig Ferguson, you've got about 2 weeks left to do it before he's off the air. So start doing it now. Okay. Well, in that event, we've been gone on a little longer than our scheduled time, but that's okay. This is all about breaking free of the cages of and allowing ourselves the freedom to do what we like. So I would just say last minute would be shout outs if anyone has any shout outs. I want to do a quick shout out to a movie I just saw called Giovanni No Shima, Giovanni's Island, which was a production IG film, which did very little at the box office even in Japan, but it won several awards at several film festivals, including one in Scotland, I might add, which is 80% true is how the author describes it. It's a story about a couple of boys who live on an island in the far north of Japan that's occupied by the Soviet Union after the end of World War II. And it's basically themed around Night on the Galactic Railroad, which I hope you've seen by now, Kyrie, but perhaps
yeah,
you haven't.
I saw it.
So we should have talked about that. But Night on the Galactic Railroad is a very elemental story to the Japanese consciousness. And so it's a very sad, it's an extremely emotional, it's a very sentimental movie. A while ago, a couple podcasts ago, I was talking about how I wished, one of the topics was, what movie do you wish they would make an anime of? And I think I said Empire of the Sun. And in a way, Giovanni's Island is a bit like Empire of the Sun in that it's, you know, that war environment as seen through the eyes of a young child. And it's really a powerful, intensely emotional film that I highly recommend anyone watch it if you haven't had a chance to watch it, which I'm guessing most of you probably haven't. It is out on Blu-ray in Japan and now coming out on Blu-ray in Europe in December, with no sign of a Blu-ray release in America, sadly, but there you go. Any shout-outs, guys? Samu, any shout-outs?
I could shout out to the c*** that's preventing Zumbra from talking in this podcast.
Last call, yeah. Zumbra, you want to join in?
I'm totally going to censor that.
Yay, I won. I won.
You don't say anything for 75 minutes, and that's what you say when you jump in. All right, shout-outs, Kyrie?
Player VN, we made a fan-made Otaku 7 visual novel, which is really small. It's short for a demo right now. We're working on it, but we would really, really appreciate it if you play it and tell us what you think. So, yeah, look, like, just ask me if you want to know more. Play it.
Yeah.
That's my shout-out.
Play it, make it popular so that it gets continued and Kyrie gets to do the OW route. That's
yes,
what
I want to do the OW route.
Yeah, okay, excellent. All right, guys, in that event, I want to thank you for your participation. And just thank you for your flexibility. Miraculously, we were able to get the scheduling done with our wildly different time zones, so that was a great victory in and of itself. It's been a lot of fun. And we'll see you all in the next podcast. Until then, everybody, thanks for listening in and stay frosty.